It's 9 minutes after 7 o'clock. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and I'm Gene Purcell, filling in for Joy Cardine this hour. The Green Bay City Council is considering legislation that would make it virtually impossible for a repeat sex offender or a violent sex offender to live within the city. If the move passes, it's likely that surrounding cities would adopt similar measures as well. The idea isn't new. It's been tried before. In Iowa, for example, where there is a statewide ban in place, that law has caused issues in nearby Wisconsin counties. We'll be taking a variety of angles on the story this morning, and we'll be beginning with Wisconsin Public Radio's reporter who is based in Green Bay. Patty Murray joins us to talk about the background of the story and what could happen before the city council today. Good morning, Patty.
Good morning.
Well, let's start with the history of this. I imagine it didn't start in a vacuum. It had to start somewhere. Where did it begin?
Well, it began with a proposed 1,500-foot ordinance, mm-hmm. and that was upped to the 2,000-foot that is going to be considered tonight. I think the real genesis of it happened, though, because it seemed like a lot of sex offenders were being placed in Green Bay when they were released from custody.
And let's talk about the specifics of the legislation. You referenced the 2,000 feet and the 1,500 feet, and what that refers to is the distance from certain locations in the city where violent sex offenders and repeat sex offenders can live.
Right. Things like parks, schools, places where children, quote-unquote, gather. There's an amusement park in Green Bay, Bay Beach, things like that.
And so basically they took these points and drew circles around them, and so anywhere within 2,000 feet of those would be considered, I think it's a red zone?
And when you look at the map, it's all red.
It's all red.
It's all red. I think maybe like 10% of the city would not fall under the 2,000-foot ban, but that's things like marshes and industrial parks. I think there are maybe a couple residential streets that would still be fair game for a released sex offender to live in, but, you know, that's kind of waterfront property and that sort of thing. So it, you know, might be a little too expensive for somebody just getting out of prison.
Now, the legislation, it goes before the council today, as I understand it, and it's been discussed before at other subcommittees and so forth. What has the tone, what has the tenor of the discussion been in Green Bay?
You mean on the city council or kind of in general?
Yeah, let's take one at a time. Let's start with the public reaction to it.
I mean, I would think most people would support it because just the idea of having a, you know, sex offender live next door, nobody likes that. I think the public, by and large, is pretty ready to go along with it, mm-hmm. you know, unless, of course, you happen to know somebody who is a released sex offender. And likewise with the city council, it passed the Protection and Welfare Committee, so I guess tonight we'll get a better idea of what the entire council feels about it.
So when it passed the Protection and Welfare Committee, was that sort of a resounding vote, or was it split? How did that go?
Boy, I can't tell you what exactly the vote count was on that, sorry.
No, that's okay. And one of the side effects of this legislation is, as I've read, that if it passes the Green Bay City Council, then other surrounding cities are very likely to adopt very similar legislation.
Exactly. Bellevue on the city, which is a suburb kind of on the city's east side, is considering one. Howard, which is on the city's west side, is considering one. I think if this passes in Green Bay, every other community neighboring would consider one.
Now, in terms of Green Bay being a place where sex offenders are placed at relatively high levels, why is that?
I couldn't tell you. I really couldn't tell you. Maybe it has to do with affordable housing. I know that there are a couple of halfway houses in Green Bay that people are placed at, so that would be my best guess.
Mm-hmm. And so it just has, so happens, though, that there are large numbers there. And is this a case where there are actual large numbers? I mean, the numbers I saw published in the paper looked like 322 are placed in Green Bay, Ashwaubenon 33, De Pere 20. And those are all nearby cities to mm-hmm. Green Bay. And Green Bay, by far, does have a large number. So that is a certain reality and not just a perception on the part of people who are backing this legislation.
I would think that would be one of their strongest arguments in favor of it.
Okay, so when does the city council vote on this today, Patty?
Well, the meeting begins at 7 o'clock. Who knows how long they'll spend debating it. So, I mean, you know, city council meetings have a tendency to go late at night sometimes.
Mm-hmm. And could this be the kind of, I imagine this would be the sort of legislation that on a local level particularly would bring out a good share of the public to speak on it if they have the opportunity.
Yes.
All right. Patty Murray, our reporter in Green Bay, thanks for joining us this
morning.
You're
welcome.
Appreciate our time. We've been talking with Patty Murray, a Wisconsin Public Radio reporter based in Green Bay. We're talking about a legislation this hour that is before the Green Bay City Council, and if passed, as we talked about, would essentially prohibit violent or repeat sex offenders from living in most of the city. Patty mentioned a figure about 10%, and that's about right. About 10% of the city would still be open to sex offenders to live in. But as she pointed out, a lot of those would be high-priced areas that many of them might not be able to live in. Coming up after the break, we're going to be talking with the president of the Green Bay City Council. He is a backer of the proposal, and we'll be finding out why he backs it and what he thinks the future of the legislation might look like. So stay tuned for that. If you'd like to join in the discussion, 800-642-1234 is the toll-free number. In Madison, call us at 263-1890. I'm Gene Purcell, filling in for Joy Cardine here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 18 minutes past 7 o'clock. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and I'm Gene Purcell, filling in for Joy Cardine. Coming up after 10 this morning on Kathleen Dunn, from 1850 to 1930, thousands of young Americans were relocated to rural areas in an attempt to find homes for the urban poor. These migrations were often referred to as the orphan trains, and after 10, Kathleen Dunn and her guests recount some of their stories. That's up after 10 this morning on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This hour, we are concentrating on legislation before the Green Bay City Council today. That legislation would essentially make it virtually impossible for convicted repeat sex offenders or violent sex offenders to live within the city limits of Green Bay. We began the hour by talking with Patty Murray, our Wisconsin Public Radio reporter based in Green Bay. We continue this hour with Chad Fredette, who is president of the Green Bay City Council. And good morning, Mr. Fredette.
Good morning, Mr. Purcell. How are you today?
I'm good, thanks. We talked a little bit about the background of this legislation with Patty Murray. But I'd be interested in hearing your take on it. You are president of the Green Bay City Council. You are a backer of this legislation. Can you tell me a little bit of the genesis of it? Why is it before the City Council in the first place? Why is this an issue in Green Bay?
Sure. I wasn't president at the time that this all started.
Mm-hmm.
I was just a regular alderman. And we had just had enough with the sex offenders in our city, the number that we had had. 87% of sex offenders are released in Green Bay, and we told the state via resolution that we've had enough. We need your help to help disperse them through Brown County. And then we also said that we backed the legislation to have GPS tracking of sex offenders for life, which we thought was a positive step, at least of the most violent, the same that we are targeting with this ordinance. And
mm-hmm.
we didn't hear anything. We sent these resolutions out. When we send out resolutions, we expect that we should at least get a response. It's representing over 100,000 people when we sent out a resolution to the state and to our legislatures, and we did not hear anything. So at that time, we thought there's nothing more we can do, I guess. Well, we found out there is. So we had a discussion last fall about ways we can combat crime and other social ills within our city, and this idea came out. Well, why don't we look at it? So we did,
mm-hmm.
and we found out that other states are working on this idea. Then the town of Algoma brought it out, the village of Franklin near Milwaukee. So we saw that there was a chance to put this forward, but we saw there were problems with other ordinances and laws out there, so we made changes to hopefully counteract some of the negatives that they have. And that's how it came forth. Then we had another alderman who came with the idea all his own and brought it out on the table a little bit earlier than we were ready for, but so we ramped up our constitutional review and got it ready, and now here we are.
And let's talk about the legislation, exactly what it does do. As I understand it, it takes a look at places within the city, schools, parks, that sort of thing, where children gather, and then sort of draws a circle around them. And 2,000 feet away from that, a registered sex offender, violent sex offender, repeat sex offender cannot live. Am I understanding that correctly?
That is correct. And what we've also done is put in an appeals process where those that are we consider not to be dangerous or can prove they've been rehabilitated or they're what we call Romeo and Juliet cases where they can be exempted from the requirements of this ordinance and live within our city, within those exclusion zones. But the main focus of the ordinance is not necessarily that. It's just to close the gate and say we don't want any more of the violent, we don't want any more of the repeat offenders, and we've had enough. We have to come up with a different idea now.
And how did Green Bay wind up with the what you consider to be excessive numbers?
Well, we have, in our county, we have the most transportation services. We have the most affordable housing, and we're a welcoming city. We take in the community development block grants. We use it for that purpose to develop affordable housing. And then we also have the services that they require. So since we have all of that, we get them all. The surrounding municipalities do not want to increase their transit services. Some of the villages have none, and they do not want it. They don't want affordable housing because they're scared of Section 8 housing voucher program recipients. They're scared of getting sexual offenders. They're scared of lower-income people, quite frankly, and that's why we have them all.
Mm-hmm. I see we've got an email here from Mary from Green Bay who writes, my daughter goes to Washington Middle School in inner city Green Bay, across from, is it Joanne's Park?
Joanne's, yes.
Joanne's Park. She has 50-plus sex offenders within a mile or two from her school. Green Bay just wants to slow down the state from picking our city for placement of these offenders. So that's the kind of reaction you are getting from constituents and kind of a driver of this legislation, I take it.
That's correct. That's one of our focuses. The other is to tell the state you have to do something different. The most violent, the repeat offenders, the Section 980s, if you're not aware what they are the ones that are so dangerous that the state actually civilly commits them to mental institutions or to prison longer because they know they should not be released, because they know they'll reoffend, that they're a danger to our community. So what we're saying is do something different. Increase your mandatory minimum sentence requirements. Get into a program for anti-recidivism that actually works, but unfortunately none do really work. Actually go back to what you said you were going to do before. The one piece of legislation and method we thought was going to work, which was to GPS track the worst of the worst for their lives. Now it's been scaled back to just their probation parole period. Well, that doesn't help us once they're released.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, keep the worst of the worst, the Section 980s that you know are a danger, the repeat offenders, keep them in prison for life. That's what we want. That is why we're pushing this, and that is why we're asking for every municipality in the state to do the same so that Madison gets the wake-up call.
Well, based on what you've done so far, what kind of sort of reaction have you gotten from the state?
We've gotten a call from the Department of Corrections saying that they will talk to us, and in our local paper it says that Gary Bies is introducing legislation for 250-foot buffer zone. Well, that's the wrong answer to Representative Bies. The correct answer should have been, well, maybe we should keep them in prison longer. Maybe we should actually fund the GPS tracking for life instead of just for parole. He didn't come up with the right answer. I'm totally disappointed in that.
Now, there are some things in place already if you're concerned about sexual offenders. In Wisconsin, they've got the sexual registry, that the website that has been up for some time, and you can just go on to it and click in your zip code and get a list of everyone who is registered. Why isn't something like that good enough in your estimation?
Well, I have that list of my area, my district in front of me. I put out a newsletter with all their pictures, what they did, where they live, and I told everyone this is a guide for you to use just so you're aware that the sex offenders do live in our neighborhood. And what I see is that a good two-thirds of them will be covered by our ordinance, and at least a third are the type of offenders we do not want living here. And what it created was the knowledge that we have too many. So that's not enough for me. Just to have them on the registry. They really need to be in prison.
Now, as I understand it, if Green Bay passes the legislation today, then surrounding cities, I'm thinking of De Pere, Ashwaubenon, and so on, will be adopting similar legislation. Is that stuff that they've already got in the planning processes, or are they just watching Green Bay to see what happens?
I believe that many of them are planning. A couple of them are watching, but we've forwarded them our ordinance version so that they may easily pass this or modify it for their own use. We really want them to pass it at this point because that's the only way the state is going to pay attention. And now after finally we start working on this process, Department of Corrections wants to talk to us. Well, it's too late to talk to the Department of Corrections. Now it's time to talk to our legislature about this issue.
Now, one of the things that's going to happen tonight is Green Bay, the council is going to vote on it. As president of the council, do you have your votes lined up? Do you think it's going to pass?
Well, I have no actual commitments because I don't ask for those, but I do have the knowledge that I believe I have enough for to pass this, enough support to pass it.
And what's the debate been like among council members up until this point? I know it's had to go through some subcommittees and so forth to get before the full council. Is this something where there is deep divisions within the various city council committees, or is this something where you think it's going to be a united front? And I know it's hard to make predictions, but you must have a sense of how it's going to go.
I have my feelings that it will pass. It may only pass by a slim margin, or we could answer enough questions that it is overwhelming majority. So it could go one of those two ways. It will. I don't believe it will die to defeat tonight. But there have been questions about why don't we have more research? Why don't we sit down with the neighboring municipalities? And I've answered those. We've done the research. We know what can happen. One of the concerns are sex offenders going underground.
Mm-hmm.
But when we looked at the laws that were in place in other states that caused the sex offenders to go underground, it's that many of them told the sex offenders they had to vacate their current homes and get out of town. And so we said, well, we're not going to do that. We're going to say we have enough now, and you can stay where you live because we know where you're registered, but we don't want any more. So we gave a grandfather clause to them, and so that took care of that issue. The other issue is, well, why don't we talk to the municipalities around us and get some consensus and try to go forward? Well, it's no use talking to our neighboring municipalities when they won't build transit services. They won't take on affordable housing. That's what sex offenders need when they come out of prison, because they don't have a lot of money. They may not have a car. So we're aware that they will not help us in that respect. So there's no reason to talk anymore about that. So the questions have essentially been answered to the rest of our representatives, and hopefully we can go forward.
Do you think you have all the negatives answered in that? I mean, you guys, it sounds as though you've been working on the legislation for quite some time, and you feel as though you've addressed it. Is there anything out there that you're concerned about that could stop the legislation?
No, not particularly, but there are the issues that have been brought up, and one that was told to me is that most sexual offenses are committed by acquaintances.
Mm-hmm.
And those that are known or related to the child victims. But I have an answer for that as well. Because 59% of those attacks are done by acquaintances only that are non-related. And if you are not allowing sex offenders to move into your city, it stands to reason that they will make less acquaintances of families over time. And so that number will decrease because you make your acquaintances by the people you live by, the people you go to worship with, those you work with, and those that where your children go to school together. So less acquaintance should eventually equal less child assault.
Gary Fredette, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the offer.
Gary Fredette is president of the Green Bay City Council, and tonight the City Council at 7 o'clock will be voting on legislation that, if passed, would essentially ban violent sex offenders and repeat sex offenders from living in any area of the city within 2,000 feet of schools, parks, or other places, and that would be most of Green Bay. We're going to continue the conversation next with someone from the Wisconsin Department of Corrections, and we'll be talking about what is in place right now. I'm Gene Purcell, in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 24 minutes now before 8 o'clock. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and I'm Gene Purcell, filling in for Joy Cardine this morning. The Green Bay City Council is considering legislation tonight that would effectively keep most repeat and violent sex offenders from being able to live inside of Green Bay. During this portion of the program, we're going to be talking with Jed Newman. He is a Department of Corrections field supervisor, and we'll be discussing what happens now with registered sex offenders and the impact that this legislation might have. Jed Newman, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Purcell.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about the process here of placing sex offenders within communities. This is not a new debate exactly. It's been coming and going for quite some time, but in Green Bay it seems to have reached a sort of a different sort of level. And in the Department of Corrections, what is the process now when someone leaves the prison system and is placed in a community? How does that work?
Well, actually, the plan starts for this individual when the individual goes to prison. That's when planning actually begins for their parole. By that, their treatment needs are addressed, their residence is addressed, their employment is addressed, so that when they go through this transition, when they get out, is much smoother. There's a misconception that we are in the placement business. We are not. When we're talking about offenders that live in Green Bay, these are people that have lived and worked here, committed the crime here, and therefore will parole to Green Bay to live with a family member or the house that they lived in previously or apartment. And if that residence is not available, then the planning process is in place to help them find an appropriate residence in this area.
Yeah, because in the earlier part of the hour, we talked with the president of the Green Bay City Council, and one of their concerns was the large numbers of people being placed in Green Bay. But what you're telling me is that people basically are placed where they came from originally.
They're already from Green Bay, yes.
And you're in Green Bay as well. What,
yes, sir.
In the terms of your work, how do you see this legislation in the community? Is this something that is causing people to think to talk about this issue, or is there a lot of emotion attached to it?
There's a lot of emotion attached to it. If you look what the Department of Corrections already does with the sex offender population in which we supervise, we have these devices in place through departmental policy and procedure. Residence assessments are conducted. Agents meet with this population group more frequently because the contact standards are higher. We use available technology in supervising them. Our contacts with collaterals, that being treatment providers and employers, is greater than with other offender population groups.
And talk about technology for a second. We heard the president of the council refer to a GPS tracking, and I know that that is a big issue right now in Governor Doyle's budget. What sorts of technology, once an offender is placed in a community, as a supervisor, how do you keep track of these folks?
When an offender is released to parole or extended supervision, they are placed on the electronic monitoring program. Two reasons: we can control their movement, monitor their movement, and restrict their movement. It acts as a tether. It acts as an extra supervision tool for the agent to utilize. Sometimes we will place a sobriety unit on this individual in the individual's home. Sobriety unit is like a PBT device, portable breath test, to ensure that they don't drink. And on occasion, we do utilize GPS so that we can limit the areas the individual goes, know where the individual goes as well.
And what role does the sex offender registry play in all of this?
The sex offender registry is created to keep this population group known to the public so that the public is aware, so the public's educated. And through a knowledgeable and educated public, it's going to be a safer public. The important thing to remember with the registry is that a majority of the offenders that are required to register have completed their parole or extended supervision or probation. They're no longer on supervision with this department, however, still required to register through the SORP.
And for people who don't know, the Sex Offender Registry is a website, and you can go on it. You just do a search for it, and you can type in your zip code, and a bunch of names will come up. You click on the name, you'll see a photo, an address, and the status of the case.
Yes.
What is the level of compliance with the Sex Offender Registry? In other words, once people get out of prison, they're placed in a community. How accurate is that information? How often do you know that they're there where they say they are?
Well, each region in the state has a sex offender registration specialist who works to ensure that everyone is compliant. If a person is on supervision, that being probation or extended supervision, and is required to register, the agent ensures the accuracy of all the information and ensures that they register so that, there is compliance in those cases. Sometimes an individual might fail to send in their letter, and a reminder is given so that they are brought to compliance. In this area, our compliance rate is high. For instance, an Alloway study was just done, and the compliance rate was at 100%.
Let's talk about the legislation a bit, and I know that the department doesn't take positions, for or against things like this, but what would the effect of the legislation Green Bay is proposing tonight, and if it passes, what effect would it have on the sexual offender population that lives in the city right now, and to look ahead down the road a bit, the population that might potentially want to live there in the future?
If I understand it correctly, it would bar Green Bay residents who have lived here, committed the crime here, been convicted here and sentenced here, and then go to prison. It would bar them from coming back to their community is essentially what it sounds like it will do. And by that, I'm aware that an appeals process is available, mm-hmm. but a person would have to then appeal to live in the city where they came from, basically, is what that's set up to do. Again, we have our own internal devices through policy procedure and our operations manual, which dictate what we do and how we do it to ensure the safety of the community. And toward that end, we have carried that out.
So if they can't live in the city, in the you know, municipality where they came from originally, what's plan B?
At this time, we would have to take a look at that. I mean, this is relatively new to us. We would have to, you know, have them work on plans with, you know, finding a residence elsewhere. Where that would be, I don't know. I anticipate surrounding communities reacting to this, possibly by enacting their own ordinance.
Mm-hmm.
And if that happens, it would greatly limit how we would be able to do our job.
Let's take a few calls right now. We do have some people who'd like to talk. Tom joins us, and I'm going to try to pronounce the name of this town. Is it Sobieski? Whoops, hold on here. I've got to press the button. Yeah, let's try it now. Sobieski?
Yes, Sobieski.
Okay. Hi, Tom.
Hi. I live north of Green Bay in Sobieski, and my feelings are is if you push those people out to these outlying areas where there's less law enforcement, you're just setting up these guys to possibly fail. And I think there needs to be legislation from the state level regarding how these people need to be reconnected in the city where they came from and where they're prosecuted, because being that they prosecuted them in, let's say, Green Bay should thus be responsible for their rehabilitation and getting them back on track, not Sobieski, not Little Suamico, not Howard. Because otherwise they're just going to be pushed and pushed and pushed, because I'm sure we're going to try to put legislation in to prevent them from being out here. You know, if there's mm-hmm. guys that come from Sobieski, I think they should be out in Sobieski. But if they're in Green Bay, from Green Bay, they belong in Green Bay. I guess that's my opinion on that.
All right, Tom, thanks for the call. Jed Neumann, would you like to respond to that?
Yeah, and Tom made a good point, because what he said has exactly happened in other states, such as Iowa, is when Iowa enacted legislation, basically that similar to what Green Bay is planning on doing, and the result is the drop in the compliance of the registry by 50%. These individuals have gone underground, not made themselves available to the registry, have caused a problem for law enforcement, basically has pushed them out so that they aren't seen, and our registry is designed to educate the public and keep the public safe by making these people known. And in other states like Oklahoma and Iowa, they've gone underground, thus creating a problem for the community's safety.
And one of the points that Tom brought up, and I want to talk about this, we've got a break coming up, but he used the term, you know, we're setting these folks up to fail. And so when we come back from the break, I'd like to talk for a few minutes about the processes that you do have to try to ensure that they don't fail. So hang on, if you would. Jed Neumann is with us. He is a Wisconsin Department of Corrections field supervisor, and we're talking about rules in place right now regarding sexual offenders in Wisconsin. And the whole story stems back to legislation being proposed in Green Bay tonight that'll be before the Green Bay City Council, that if it's passed would essentially ban most violent sexual offenders, repeat sex offenders, from living within city limits. I'm Gene Purcell, and I'm filling in for Joy Cardine this morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 12 minutes before 8 o'clock. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and I'm Gene Purcell, filling in for Joy Cardine. This hour, we are talking about a measure that the city of Green Bay is taking up today that would effectively ban violent and repeat sex offenders from living within the city. We've talked with a number of guests this hour so far, including our Wisconsin Public Radio reporter based in Green Bay, the president of the Green Bay City Council, and now we're joined by Jed Newman, who is a Department of Corrections field supervisor, and we've been talking a little bit about how the Department of Corrections works with sex offenders to get them reacclimated to living within the community. And Jed Newman, before the break, that was the point I wanted to talk about a bit. We heard from Tom in Sebesky. And he talked about setting people up to fail if they get pushed out of their community and wind up in other places and just keep sort of getting pushed out and out and out and so on. How do you set up people to succeed, I guess, to kind of flip Tom's phrase around?
Data does support what Tom said in the fact that offenders, sex offenders, are more likely to succeed and not reoffend if they have a pro-social support group, a strong network that they're able to be attached to and be supported by. Through the department's reintegration and reentry efforts, like I mentioned, we start the planning process when an individual is sentenced. One thing to keep in mind is that many sex offenders are not sentenced to prison. They're placed on parole in the community, so not all are released from the prison. You know, we assess their risk and their needs, and based on that, we refer them to appropriate treatment. And like I mentioned, also, we use available technology in supervising them by limiting their movement, limiting the hours that they're out of their residence and where they go.
Let's go and take a few more phone calls right now. Thomas joins us in Sandstone. Hi, Thomas.
Thank you for taking my call. I heard your guest say that a safer community is a well-informed community, and I guess what I don't hear in this conversation, and maybe it happened earlier, I didn't catch it on the radio, was the lives are ruined. Children's lives and families are ruined by these monsters. And I think the way to have a safer community is to have these monsters and these perverts behind bars for good. If you're a repeat offender, you don't get out of jail. You don't go back into society. And that would make a safer community, not just what you guys are talking about.
All right, Tom, thanks for the call, or Thomas, excuse me. And Jed Newman, I'm not sure whether it's in your purview. I mean, you, the Department of Corrections, would work with the rules that are set down by the legislature.
Right. We work with the sentence structure that's available. And when a person is released, that's the person that we deal with once they're released on parole or extended supervision. While they are in the institution, treatment is offered, made available, and they are participating in sex offender treatment, cognitive intervention, anger management, AODA, anything to meet their needs and risks and to address those issues so that they are less of a risk when they come out. Treatment is often continued in their case when they are released.
In regards to changing prison terms, though, I haven't heard anything that is being proposed for the legislature. Doesn't mean it's not out there. Have you heard anything?
I'm not aware of any at this time, no.
Robert,
not to say it isn't happening, though, but I'm not aware of it.
Yeah, there's a lot of things in the legislature we don't always hear about until it becomes news. Robert joins us, and he is in Fond du Lac right now. Hi, Robert.
Hi, I've got three questions.
Okay.
First question is, I was told, and I don't know if it's true, that if a man or a woman's urinating in public to relieve themselves, they can be arrested and convicted of a sex crime. Or number two is, how many women are actually convicted and in this program for sex crimes? And number three is it true that counties all over the state of Wisconsin receive federal dollars for the number of convictions for domestic abuse and for the number of convictions of sex abuse? So they literally, the system is, in my opinion, if that is true, is set up to aggressively convict, even falsely, men and or women from domestic abuse and or sex abuse just to get more federal dollars in each county. I'll take my answers off. off the air.
All right, Robert, thanks for the call. And Jed Newman, I'm not sure how many of these you can answer, but let's start with this.
I'm sorry, if I understood him correctly, he had questions about urinating in public, and if a person does that, the officer will make a referral to the district attorney's office for charges. What they're charged with is up to the district attorney. The referral could be made for lewd and lascivious behavior or indecent exposure or disorderly conduct, a number of things. But again, that's up to the district attorney. As far as the number of the women on the registry, there are women on the registry. As far as those numbers, I don't have that. But there are women in prison for sex offenses. There are women on parole and probation supervision for those, and as I mentioned, on the registry as well. And the third question you had, if there's federal funding available for quotas on domestic violence and sexual assault convictions in a county, I'm not aware of a quota system, if I understood his question correctly.
Yeah, that was the way I understood it as well. And so let's go back and take a few more phone calls right now. If you'd like to join in the conversation, we do have a couple of open lines, 800-642-1234. If you're calling for Madison, it is 263-1890. Mary Lou joins us, and she is in Cudahy. Hi, Mary Lou.
Hi. Hi, I'm a 51-year-old woman who's a survivor of childhood sexual abuse. A sexual assault at 7 and incest at 11 to 13. And I have come to the conclusion that we really need to do more studies of why people offend, because it actually is a mental illness, and I know it's unpopular to provide tax monies for research.
Okay. And Mary Lou, what do you think about legislation like this that would just effectively take someone and move them out of a community and put them somewhere else? Mary Lou?
Well, I'm thinking.
Okay.
Well, I don't know exactly where they're going to go.
Mm-hmm.
I think they should be in group homes with constant monitoring and treatment.
All right, Mary Lou, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. And Jed Newman, one of the things there, she raises that question that we've heard a couple of times this hour already, and that is, if the legislation passes, where are they going to go? And you referenced this earlier briefly, and they go underground. And when you say that, what's that mean? They just disappear? They don't register? They go away?
They become non-compliant with the registry, don't live where they once did because it's not available to them. Therefore, they become transient. The more stability that's offered to a person, the better they're going to function, whether they're a sex offender or not a sex offender. And data shows that a pro-social network is made available and a sex offender is involved in that, they're likely to succeed. And therefore, if they succeed, we have a safer community and less victims.
It is difficult, though, and we heard from a couple of callers earlier the emotion that gets caught up in these from victims of sexual assault, you know, family members who are affected by it. And it is hard to look at the big picture. And in your position, you have to look at the big picture. I mean, that's what you do.
We do. We have to deal with the entirety of the situation. Sometimes we deal with victims. Sometimes we deal with the parents of the victims, the parents of the perpetrator themselves, and everyone else involved in that, relatives, employers, people that provide treatment. It's a big network that we deal with to carry out the mission of the department.
We've got time for another call. Gloria joins us, and she is in Milwaukee. Hi, Gloria.
Hi. I think this whole program is the most hideous thing I've ever seen in my life. We have murderers that have served their sentences, all done, no probation, no parole, they're free to come and go. Armed robberies, serve your sentences, you're done. All of these people are seen by psychiatrists. Anyone that's rated a 0 to 1 should be off that list in a year. 1 to 2, off the list in 2 years. We're going to have half the nation monitoring the other half of the nation. This doesn't make any sense.
Gloria, thanks for the call. And Jed Newman, that is an argument. It's not hard to make that case in some regards, that there are people out there for serious crimes. And once you're out of prison, you're basically out of prison.
sometimes a person does go to the maximum discharge date, yes. But what we have to remember in regard to the registry, to go back to that, is that it was created to keep the public informed so that they are knowledgeable about where they live and who is in their community. And to that end, we want the public to be safe, and that's why it's imperative that we look at this ordinance and what's happened in other states where they aren't compliant because of legislation that passed, and we don't want that to happen here.
And in your estimation, is the sexual offender registry effective? Does it do what it's designed to do? Do people know about it?
Yes, and they're becoming increasingly aware, and it's helpful that we have sex offender registration specialists in each region to ensure that people that are supposed to register are compliant with the registry.
Jed Newman, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
I appreciate your time. Jed Newman has been with us for the past couple of minutes, a Department of Corrections field supervisor. And earlier in the hour, we were joined by Chad Fredette, the president of the Green Bay City Council, and Patty Murray, a Wisconsin Public Radio reporter based in Green Bay. The topic this hour, an ordinance in Green Bay being considered by the City Council tonight at 7 o'clock, that if it's passed, would effectively prohibit repeat sex offenders and violent sex offenders from living within city limits. And we've been getting a variety of viewpoints on that for the past hour. If you'd like a copy of the program, you can listen on our archives on our webpage at WPR.org. You can also call the radio store at 800-747-7444. The program was produced today by Keisha Mabra, and we had on-air production this morning from Karen Prager. I'm Gene Purcell, and I'm filling in for Joy Cardine this week here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.